Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nazir Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara for the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the bottom of Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side of our specially marked Daf Gemara, where we have the Nosei, the topic heading, and there is an indication that this sukya, this topic, will last till Daf Yud Beis Amid Beis. Ha'oimer lishlucho, we have written on the side, one who says to his agent, Kadesh li isha, go out and marry for me, marry on my behalf a woman. In other words, give her money in my name that she would agree to marry me. Stam means he doesn't say which woman. Lo pirish ezi isha, vezeir, he doesn't say which city, which woman, which city. Asur b'chol hanoshim shabolim. So this fellow that sent out the agent, he is now prohibited to marry any other woman. In other words, in the meantime, he doesn't know, and he might never discover who the agent married on his behalf. There was no specification. So in the meantime, we say that this mishalech, the husband, is now prohibited to marry any other woman. Why? Dilma zoisi kroivasa shazu shekid shelo hashliach. Because any given woman might be a forbidden relative of the woman that was married on his behalf by the agent. In other words, the agent went out and married on this fellow's behalf some woman. The next woman that the sender meets up with might be her sister, and it ends up being that this is your real wife's sister, or her mother, or her daughter, or whatever. As we turn to the Gemara itself, there is some markings that need explanation. You're going to see a volcano shape, or a trapezoid. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading, you'll notice that the bottom part of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, it appears as a ma'akav. We're reading from the Mivneh structural note heading. The narrow part facing up is a nekuda, or a tshuva. We're going to call it a point, or as the Gemara continues, it will end up being a response. And the inverted volcano, Kushya, represents questions. So we're going to open up with a point made by Rabbi Yochanan. It will be challenged. If you turn to Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, you'll see many of these shapes appearing in alternating directions. The name Rabbi Yochanan, you'll notice, is in a firebox. And we've noted Hadiyun Saviv Dvorav Mamshich Ad Yud Beis Amud Beis. Regarding that which Rabbi Yochanan says here, will be the center or the subject of the discussion until Yud Beis Amud Beis. So now that we've mapped out the Gemara, let us turn to the text. We're at Yud Aleph Amud Beis, second line from the bottom, Omer Reb Yitzchok Bar Yosef, Omer Reb Yochanan, Ha'omer Lishlucho, one who says to his agent, and you'll notice we have a long point marking. He says, we continue now at the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, say the Kadesh li Isha Stam. He tells the agent, go out and marry on my behalf, marry for me a woman. In other words, give a woman money, or money, something of value, in exchange for her consent to marry me. So the agent goes out, and no specification was made. That's what the Gemara means when it says Isha Stam, a woman, no identification. Asur b'chol hanoshim sheba'olam. So the sender, he is forbidden with regard to all women of the world. Why? Chazaka shliach oisa shlichuso. There is an assumed status of agents that they fulfill their mission. V'kevan de lo porish lei, and since there was no specification regarding which woman to marry on his behalf, ha lo yoda he niu kodish lei. So the sender does not know which woman was will have been married on his behalf. So that any other woman that the sender meets up with might be her, your actual wife's, forbidden relative, like her mother or her sister or her daughter. There is more to say on this topic that you'll find in the Tosfos at the top, Dimaso Osir, but in the interest of keeping things simple and straightforward, let us just continue in the Gemara. But I highly recommend to look into the comments that the Tosfos makes. Esvei Reish Lakish L'Reb Yochanan. So here you see the inverted volcano shape. Reish Lakish challenges Reb Yochanan. The Tanaic source that's quoted deals with bird sacrifices. Bird sacrifices are made up of two pairs of birds, and in many cases, the birds that a person brings are actually two kinds of sacrifices, an oila sa'of and a chata sa'of. And a ola sa'of is treated on the Mizbeach differently than a chata sa'of. We don't have to get into the details here, but just recognize that they're two distinct sacrifices. So the source says, Kain stuma. Stuma means undefined. That means a person bought two birds in anticipation of labeling which bird would be which kind of sacrifice. And he didn't do that yet. So he has a pair of birds, stuma, undefined. Sheporcha goizel echod mehem lavir oilam. And one of the birds, goizel is the singular bird, one of them fluttered away. O sheporcha lebein chatoi sameisois. Or it flew into a group of sin offering birds that can't be used, and as a result of their non-use, these birds are set off to die. They're called chatos abesis. There are five examples of why a sin offering would be declared set off to die, unusable. One example is the owner received his atonement through another sacrifice, so he doesn't need this one anymore. That's an example of a chatas hamesa. Oy shemes echod mehem. Or the fellow who bought two birds, one of the two died. So yikach zug lasheni. Given any of these cases where you had bought two birds, did not define them yet as to what kind of korban it will serve, as one of them became, we'll say, out of service, flew away. The source says, Yikach zug lasheni, you simply replace it with another bird. You buy a second bird. Vilu kein mifureshes, ein loy takona. If he had two birds and he had defined them, one is a chatos and the other is an ola, and one of the two flew away and he doesn't know which one flew away. If we look at the Rashi, a few lines down from here, Ilu came the Fureshes Sheporach Echod Mehem Ve'Eno Yodeya Ezohi, and he doesn't know which one was it—the Ola bird or the Chatos bird that flew away. Ein Lo Takona, the remaining bird has no solution. Lefisha Ein Yodeya Ezo LeChatos VeEzo LeOla, he doesn't know which kind to replace. Ve'Afagav the Piresh Kevon De Lo Havi Travayu Kameh, even though he had defined which one was which, but since the both of them are now in front of him right now, only one remains. Lesbuy Kira, he doesn't recognize. He apparently was able to recognize which one was with which through contrast, but one is gone, so he doesn't have his point of contrast anymore. De Lo Yada Ihai Sheni Havi Chatos Oyola, he doesn't know if this one that remains is a Chatos or an Ola. So that's as far as the owner of the birds himself is concerned. The one that remains, he won't be able to use it. He'll have to buy two new birds and then define them. V'ilu shar kinim ba'almo miskinon However, all other pairs of birds out there, people can use them. There's no problem with them. They can bring their sacrifices. And we look at Rashi, V'ilu shar kinin d'almo miskinon, v'amai, why is that? The Gemara will ask this, and why is that? Leimo l'chol man d'maisi kinin, haynu hay d'porach l'ploni esmol, anyone who now brings his own pair of birds, why can't we raise the possibility that that which you're bringing, one of them is actually that guy's bird that flew away. V'nimtza miskapi b'korban chavero, and it turns out the second fellow is using a sacrifice owned by the first guy. Well, did we not just say with regard to the case of the man who was sent an agent to marry a woman that all other women are forbidden to him? So why not say by the same token that all other birds are forbidden? So now let's read that in the Gemara. V'ilu sh'ar kinin ba'almo miskinon v'amai, why do we say that all other people's birds are okay to be brought as sacrifices? Lema kol chado v'chado, let us say that any given bird, dilmo hai nihu, maybe it is this one that had flown away from that first fellow. And the problem, as we saw in the Rashi, is that you, the second guy, is now receiving atonement through someone else's sacrifice, and that's not legitimate. So in very simple terms, we're paralleling all the birds of the world to the case of all the women of the world. And if you're going to tell me that in the case of the marriage, that the sender is forbidden to marry any other woman in the world on the grounds that she is problematic, as we described earlier, so to all the birds of the world should be prohibited to be brought as sacrifices, because any one given bird might be that bird which fluttered away. Omar Le. So Rabbi Yochanan responds. He says, how can you compare women to birds? We're going to encounter concepts in the next 3-4 lines of Gemara, and we'll just say a word or two about these concepts before we read on in the Gemara. One of them has to do with things, items, entities that have, let's say, permanent locations. They're called kavua. They have a set place, even though physically they may move, but they move very little. They have an established location. When a doubt arises concerning something of that nature, which is called kavua, we say kol kavua kemechtza al mechtza dami. A doubt that arises, something of that nature, we say you have a 50% chance that it's okay and a 50% chance that it's not okay. Now, these concepts might sound a bit abstract. So be it. We can't elaborate too much more on the topic other than informing you that they are based on scriptures. You're dealing here with issues or concepts that are based on Gzeres HaKosuvs, and beyond that, we can't say much more. So, one concept we've already mentioned, kol kavua, things that have established locations, that don't move around a lot. And when a doubt arises concerning that type of entity, the doubt is a serious doubt. It's a 50% chance okay, 50% chance not okay. There's another entity, another situation, and in using Talmudic terms, called the porish meruba porish. Items that are not kavua, that don't have a fixed location, and you can imagine things like birds. When you encounter any given bird or any given item that's like that, that moves, that doesn't have a fixed location, we say that which you just encountered, it got separated, it got removed from, and you're meeting up with it from the rove, from the majority. called, and again, called a Porush, anything that gets separated and you encounter it and you don't know its identity. So we say, ascribe it to the majority. And in the case of the birds, the majority of the birds were not owned by the person in question. In other words, that person in question that was the original owner of a bird, one of whose birds fluttered away, okay, one bird fluttered away. Now, I encounter some bird out there in the world. I'm not going to assume it's that one bird that belonged to so-and-so. The bird that I'm encountering now, or that I have now, comes from the majority of birds. And hence, it's okay. Now, what about the woman? The woman is different. And now we'll see this described in the Gemara. So now Rabbi Yochanan says back to Reish Lakish, Omar Lei, Ko'amino ano isha, delo naida. I described in my original halacha, where Rabbi Yochanan appeared in the firebox, that a woman was married on his behalf. All other women are usher. Well, the woman is an entity, delo naida. She doesn't move around a lot. She's basically located in her house. And any woman, therefore, that we'll say is the subject of our doubt, is considered 50% chance allowed, 50% chance not allowed. So I spoke about women in the context of being married. The amrisli at isura denayed, and you, Reish Lakish, were attacking my point based on the case of birds. Birds are not described as having a fixed location. And hence, if you encounter any given bird out there, it's part of the rove. It's part of the majority. And the majority, in our case, are mutter. They're not owned by the fellow that lost his bird. The chitema hachanami nayid emur b'shuka ashkach v'kodesh. You might say, well, the woman is also an entity of movement. The shaliach that was sent out may very well have met the woman that was now married on the sender's behalf. He met her in the market. It's not in her home. He met her out there. So you would say then that the woman is also nayid. The Tosfos adds, Tosfos on the second line under the Gemara text, b'shuka ashkach v'kodesh klomar, Hecha de motza oisa b'shuka haya lanu lomar shiyucha lekatsha de lo kavia havya v'im kain lo have kavua. That wherever he met her, he might have met her in the market, he could have fulfilled his agency and married her for the sender's behalf, on the sender's behalf there. And at that point, she wasn't in a state of fixture. Well, that doesn't change the picture, though. Hussam, in the case of the woman, even if he did meet her out of her fixed location, her house, Hadra l'nichusa, she goes home anyway. Gabi Kain mi Hadra, with regard to birds, do they go back? So that a woman, even if you meet her and married her out in the public, in an area beyond her house, nevertheless, the nature of the woman is to return to her house. She has a fixed location. Birds are not comparable. And therefore, your question on me is no question. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking scheme, and on the side we have a nosei mivne heading. The house shape that you see is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take in the Gemara, because if you scan ahead, you'll notice house markings appearing in alternating directions all the way till the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amid Beis. So what have we noted on the side? Dino shel rava utshuvo savuro. With the house point facing up, we're going to see rava's halacha, and the house with the point facing up also will represent responses to questions, and the inverted house, that represents kushios. And we continue reading the note on the side of our Gemara. By the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So the note on the side reads, Lefi Rava, Moide Rabbi Yochanan de Hamishaleach Diliel, according to Rava, Rabbi Yochanan will concede that the sender that we described before, Mutar Biisha She'ein Lo Kroivois Shine'esorois Olav Machmas Kidushin Elu. We mentioned before that the sender, being that the identity of the woman married for him is not known, he, the sender, is therefore prohibited in marrying any other woman. However, if the sender meets up with a woman that has no relatives, the woman simply has no relatives, therefore she represents someone that could not have been or could not have become forbidden to the sender. Just to repeat, before we were suspect of any other woman being possibly the sister of the one that the agent had married on behalf of the sender. So, if just to use names, and Rochel and Leah are sisters, the agent may have married on behalf of the sender a woman named Rochel, and if she happens to have a sister, Leah, and the sender meets up with a Leah in the Shuk, he can't marry her because that might very well be Rochel's sister. I hope that the use of the names was not confusing. We're not speaking about, it was just an example. We don't mean to say all Rochel and Leahs are problematic. Just an example of the possibility of the, once again, the agent married on behalf of the sender a particular woman, and if the sender meets up with another woman, that other woman might be a relative of the woman married by the agent on behalf of the sender. And that's where the problem arises. However, if the sender now meets up with a woman that has no relatives that to whom we can then ascribe any prohibition to her, she would be allowed. We'll try to be more concrete as we go through the Gemara. So first note that as we turn to the Gemara text, we have a long point, and after the long point, that will be followed by a question, which is also marked as a long question. Omar Rava, Umoide Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan, who had been very restrictive vis-a-vis the sender and his marrying another woman, he, Rabbi Yochanan, will concede Be'isha She'ein lo lo bas v'lo bas bas v'lo bas ben v'lo aim v'lo aim aim v'lo achos. If the sender of the agent, he meets up with a woman that has no daughter, no granddaughter from a daughter, granddaughter from a son, no mother, no mother of mother, no sister. So we're describing a second woman that basically has no female relatives. The afal pi shahoisa lo achois v'nisgar shaliachar mikan. The woman that the sender meets up with now might very well have a sister who later on became divorced. When we say later on became divorced, what do we mean later on? Later on means after the agency was established. This woman, this second woman, has a sister that got divorced. That doesn't bother us. That doesn't create any prohibition for this sender and this second woman to marry. Dehahi Sharia. This second woman would be allowed, even though she in fact does have a sister, but at the time that the agency was established, that sister happened to be married to another man. So the Shaliach wouldn't have she wouldn't have been someone married on behalf of the sender. So this woman that the sender meets up with, being that she has no daughter and no grandmother, no grandmother, all the relatives we mentioned, she would be allowed. Just to focus on an example, when we say that the woman that the second woman that the sender meets up with, we say she doesn't have a daughter. What are we saying? We're saying that there's no reason to suspect then that the agent married on behalf of the sender this woman's daughter. And hence the second woman would be the mother of the sender's real wife. Well, if she doesn't have a daughter, so that problem doesn't arise. Now, regarding this last point, namely that the woman that the sender meets up with now, we'll call her the second woman, who does have a sister, but she's a married sister, we don't have to worry about any problems, even though later on she gets divorced. My taimo, why is it that we're not concerned? And the Tosfos points out that this my taimo could be read as also heichidomi. In other words, what are the circumstances here? Tosfos points out that the language of this masech, the loshen of Nozir, is mishune. And if you haven't realized that till now, it will become more and more prominent as we go on. The language, we mentioned this in our introductory shiur, that Nozir is a masechta, a tractate whose style is not that conventional, similar in certain ways to that which you may have learned in Maseches Nedarim. So here the Gemara asks, regarding this point of the second woman having a married sister, and just because this second woman happens to have a sister, but at the point of the agency, this sister was married, we're not choshesh. And here the Gemara explains, debahi shaita de ka'omar lei, at the point that the agent was established, the agency was established, go and marry for me a woman, have a nesiva legava. The sister was married. So that if you encounter let's just read a little more in the Gemara. Ki mashvi shaliach. We have a new marking on the side under the Mivneh heading. You see, be'ezet tnoyim shayach limanoi shaliach. Under what circumstances do we see agency is established? So, ki mashvi shaliach, when agency is made, is established b'milsa dekaimo kamei. It's established only with regard to things, to possibilities that are at that point in time a possibility. B'milsa de lo kaimo kamei lo mashvi shaliach. Regarding possibilities that at the time of establishment of the agency are not a possibility, so with regard to those, he's not considered having the power of agency. That sounds a little abstract, maybe, but so let's make it a little more concrete. Our sender meets a woman, and this woman has no daughter, she has no mother, she has no grandmother. This woman that he meets happens to have a sister. Now, when does he meet this woman? He meets her, using calendar dates, he meets her on the 2nd of Nisan. This sender had established agency on the 1st of Nisan, the day before, go out and marry for me a woman. Our sender meets a second woman on the 2nd of Nisan. Now this woman that he meets on the 2nd of Nisan happens to have one relative. She has a sister. Now, are we going to suspect that maybe her sister was married on behalf of the sender, making this second woman prohibited? Well, this woman's sister, the second woman's sister, she happened to have been a married woman on the 1st of Nisan. It might very well be that on the 2nd of Nisan, she, the sister, is in fact divorced. However, the agency that was established on the 1st of Nisan was such that this second woman's sister could not have been a candidate for marriage, because on the 1st of Nisan, when the agency was established, she had still been married. We continue in the Gemara. And here you can see a question. Tanan. And we note that it's a long question. It goes till Omid Beis. Tanan. Hareini nozir v'olai legaleach nozir. So, this should be familiar. It's a quote from the recent Mishnah. Person says, I'm accepting upon myself nazirus. You noted this, of course, on Daf Yud Aleph Omid Beis, the previous Omid of Gemara in the middle, that Mishnah. He says, I accept upon myself nazirus, v'olai legaleach nozir, and I also obligate myself to bring nozir sacrifices for someone else who's a nozir. V'shoma chaveru v'yomar, and his friend heard this and said, v'ani, v'olai legaleach nozir. And I too, and upon me also to bring a nozir's sacrifices. Im hoyu pikhin, if they're wise and want to save money, so megalchin ze etze. They will bring each other's nozir sacrifices. So that as far as sacrificial purchases, each one of these fellows will be only purchasing one set of nozir sacrifices. A will bring B's sacrifices, and B will bring A's sacrifices. Vim lav, if they're not pikhin, then megalchin nazirim achirim. They'll have to bring sacrifices for other nazirim. And in a case like that, they'll end up bringing their own nazir sacrifices because of their own nazirus, and they'll bring other nazir sacrifices as well. Let's focus, though, on what we've labeled Aleph, the Aleph case. We have two fellows, Mr. A and Mr. B, and each one said, the first fellow says, Hareini Nozir, V'olai legaleach Nozir, he accepts upon himself Nazirus, and also obligates himself to bring some other Nozir sacrifices. The second fellow, upon hearing that, he says, I too, which we understand means he is going to accept Nazirus, and he will bring sacrifices as well for another Nazir. And in the Aleph case, Mr. B is going to be bringing sacrifices on behalf of Mr. A. That's what the Mishnah said, Megalchin Zeh Zeh. So Mr. B, when he makes his vow, his two-part vow, personal Nazirus acceptance plus to bring sacrifices on behalf of another Nazir. Who is the other Nazir? Oh, so we said if they're Pikhin, so Mr. B will bring sacrifices on behalf of Mr. A, who already had accepted upon himself Nazirus. So in the world of Mr. B, if you put yourself in the shoes of Mr. B, Mr. B is obligating himself to bring sacrifices of an already existing nazir. So the Gemara says, Bishlomo Basra, I understand the second fellow, Mr. B, and he's going to bring sacrifices on behalf of Mr. A, Iko Kadmo Kame. Well, the first guy is there. He's already an obligated nazir. So as an obligated nazir, he needs sacrifices to be brought. So Mr. B brings on his behalf sacrifices. Elo kadmo, ni iko basra kame. Mr. A, how can Mr. A end up bringing sacrifices on behalf of Mr. B? How can Mr. B fulfill his nazir sacrifice obligations through the sacrifices offered by Mr. A? When Mr. A said, I will bring some nazir sacrifices, well, there was, Mr. B had not yet obligated himself to nazirus. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, Elo kadmo, amai megaleach es hasheni. How can Mr. A bring the sacrifices on behalf of Mr. B? Babahu shaita, at the time that Mr. A spoke, obligating himself to bring nozir sacrifices, another Nozir sacrifices, Lo havi hai Nozir kamei, he wasn't there, he wasn't a Nozir yet, ve'at hu di amris, and you, namely Rava, had pointed out, Milsa de lo koyim kamei di inish, something that's not present and available in front of a person, Lo masik adaiti libudir le, it doesn't occur to him to do it, to become obligated toward it. Why then do you say, why does the Mishnah then give that as an option? Namely, that Mr. A can bring the Nozir sacrifices for Mr. B? When Mr. A accepted that obligation, according to what Rava said earlier, a person obligates himself or becomes committed. We spoke about agency appointment only with regard to things that are at that point a possibility, a reality. Things that are not at that point a reality, he doesn't become bound to it. It seems from this Tanaic source that that's really not a consideration. And the Gemara continues in developing its question. So, having read Elo Kadmo Miko Basro Kame, how can Mr. A fulfill his obligation of exempting another Nozir through bringing the Nozir sacrifices of Mr. B? We continue at the top of Amud Beis, Elo Hachi Ka'omar. It must be then that the first Nozir's declaration really is as follows. He says, in addition to him saying, I will be a Nozir, he says, I will bring Nozir sacrifices imashkachna dehave Nozir agalche. If it turns out that my friend over here, Mr. B, becomes a Nozir, even though at the time that Mr. A is speaking, Mr. B has not yet obligated himself to becoming a Nozir. He vows Nozirus only afterwards. Nevertheless, Mr. A's declaration is there to cover that as well. Well, hochanami, hochi kormale. So too in our case of the man and the agent sent out. You know what? The agency arrangement was. E mashkachas de migrisho kodishli. We used the example before of the first of Nisan agency was established. The sender might very well have said, or from the case of the Nozir, we will then say that the sender must have said, I'm appointing you an agent here on the first of Nisan to marry on my behalf a woman that if you find her subsequently, if you find her tomorrow on the second of Nisan to be divorced, marry her on my behalf. Oh, now if that's the way the agency was established, that I'm appointing you on the first of Nisan and marry on my behalf a woman that when you find her, she's already divorced, how can Rava have said that when the sender meets up with a woman that happens to have a sister, but on the day that the agency was established, the sister had still been yet married, so this second woman is okay, even though when you meet her, her sister may very well have already been divorced. Why should we allow that? Answer. Amri. Lo mashvi inish. Again, we're defining the terms of agency. Lo mashvi inish shaliach elo b'milsa demotzi ovid hashta. A person does not assign agency other than with respect to things that he could do right now. B'milsa de lo motzi ovid le hashta. When you're dealing with agency, things that you can, that cannot be executed right now, lo mashvi shaliach. So he is not appointed a shaliach. He's not appointed as an agent. In other words, his agency simply doesn't cover things that he cannot do right now. So if on Aleph Nisan the man is appointed as an agent, and the woman who eventually will be married by this agent is right now on Aleph Nisan, off limits, because she happens to be married. Even though when the agent meets her, she's a free agent because she's already been divorced, but his agency doesn't cover that. He has no power to marry her on behalf of the sender. The Gemara questions this, and you'll notice we have a long question marking. That means we have to go through a significant portion of Gemara to see the question. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is this really true? This concept of agency being effective only with regard to things that can be done right now?" Toshma. So we quote now a Tanaic source from Maseches Nedarim. Hopefully those who learned the Maseches Nedarim as part of the Daf Yomi cycle, that was the Masechta that preceded our current Masechta. This might very well be familiar. It says, Ha'oimer l'apotropos shelo, a person says to his executor, man who manages his household, he says, Kol nedarim shetodur ishti mikan ad she'ovoy mimokoin ploni. Hafer law, all vows that my wife makes, I want you, all vows that my wife makes from now until I return home from my trip to such and such a place, Hafer law, I want you to absolve those vows. The Hafer law, and the apotropos expresses his hafara. He does act. He declares the lady's vows void. Yochel yumufarim, is that effective? Tamud lomar, it's not effective. Isha yekimenu veisha yefirenu. Divrei Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua says that there's a scriptural prevention of that being effective. Pasuk says, a husband establishes, and a husband is the one that voids. Rabbi Yonason disagrees, and he says, Motzinu b'chol mokim sheshlucha sholem kamoso. A person's agent is like the sender himself, like the original party. So that if a husband can absolve the woman of her vows, he who is appointed by the husband also is able to do so. Now, in focusing on Rabbi Yoshua for a moment, the Gemara continues. Taima, the reason that there is no hafora, even according to Rabbi Yoshua, is Yomar Achmona Yisha Yekimenu Vyisha Yefirenu. There's a scriptural reference. We'll call it a detail. Ha lav hachi. If not for that particular scriptural reference, apotropos mefer, the apotropos would have been able to absolve the vows. We glance at the Tosfos at the top of the page. Taimo de kos rachmon ishefenu nichole loisvei gam l'Rabbi Yoshua. Here, the Tosfos is pointing out that this question, the question the Gemara wants to develop, could have been asked also using Rabbi Yonason as the starting point of the question, but the Gemara prefers to focus on Rabbi Yoshua for the time being. So now, we've established that if we didn't have this Gezeres HaKosov, this particular scriptural restriction, the apotropos would have been able to absolve her of the vows. V'ilu gabi didei tanyo. But now, when you look at the husband himself, in this case, the one who established the agency, you look at the sender, the original party himself, it says, Ha'imer lishto, kol nedarim shetaduri, mikan ve'ad she'ovo mimokom ploni. Yu kayomen lo amar klum. All vows that you make from now until I come back from such and such a place, I want them to be kayomen. I want them to be established as vows. Lo amar klum, that declaration has no value. Harehi muforin, if he says, I declare them from right now void, Rebbe Lozer omer mufar, v'chachomim omrim eino mufar. We want to focus on the chachomim, that's why we have a dashed underline point here. The chachomim say that this, we'll call this advanced absolution is ineffective. Kosaka daitoch, ki omer Rebbe Yoshua, the Bodi Rabbonon, the Amri lo motzi mefer. The thinking at this point is Rebbe Yoshua above was speaking in accordance with the opinion of the Rabbonon, who say that the husband cannot do this. The husband himself cannot issue this advanced vow absolution. Ve'i lav da'oma rachmona isha yekimeno v'isha yefireno apetrobas hafe mefer. And if not for the scriptural reference, we established before that the agent could have been Mefer. So what have we described now? We have described where even though the Mishaleach, namely the husband, could not have done it, could not have done the absolution, the agent is able to do the absolution. So this is a challenge to what was established on the fourth line from the top. On the fourth line from the top, we said that an agent is not appointed to do things that the sender himself could not do at the time of the agency. Here we have where the sender, the appointer, the balabayas himself cannot do something, and yet the agent is able to do it. The Gemara attempts to answer this by simply saying, "V'dilmo aliba de Rabbi Eliezer diomar motzi mefer." That which Rabbi Yoshia said before, and we said, if not for the scriptural reference, the apotropos would have been able to be mefer. That only is a result of Shitas Rebbe Eliezer, where the husband as well would have been able to be Mefer. So since the husband himself would have been able to do the advanced Hafora, the agent, namely the apotropos, is also able to do the advanced Hafora. This response essentially is the, we'll say, the end of the main answer to the question raised in the long question. The next three lines, the Gemara raises a technical question and responds, leaving us with this basic answer that if you thought to be asking a question from Rabbi Yoshia showing the potential effectiveness of the apotropos, and having assumed that Rav Yoshia was based on the Chachomim that the husband himself could not have been Mefer, that was an incorrect assumption, because Rav Yoshia really said what he said based on the opinion of Rebbe Lozer, where the husband himself could have been Mefer. And now we continue with the Gemara. E hachi, well, if you're telling me that the husband himself could have been Mefer, so Loma li l'shavye shaliach, why in the source where Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason appeared, why was there any interest in appointing an apotropos? Lefer lo ihu, let the husband himself do the advanced annulment when he leaves the house. Remember, the husband was interested in declaring those vows that his wife makes from the point of his departure till the point of his return. Well, he could have done it at the point that he's about to walk out of the house with his suitcases and his travel ticket in hand and whatever. At that point, as he's walking out of the house, let him, the husband himself, Mefer. Why bother with the agent? Kosovar, we have an answer to that technical question. We have an answer. Kosovar, the husband, was worried or was figuring Dilma Mishtalino o raschona o matridna. If I'm going to wait till that point that I leave the house to announce the advanced annulment, I might forget. I'm afraid I'm going to forget. Or he might be angry, or he might be mutrad, preoccupied with other things on his mind, and he won't do the advanced annulment. So he's playing it safe, and he entrusts his apotropos to issue the advanced annulment of the vows from the point that the husband leaves on his journey. But as we said, that's the appointment of the apotropos was only a technical consideration, but the main point is, once again, in order to accept Rava's halacha, that a shaliach, an agent, is appointed and given power of agency only with regard to those matters that the original sender could himself have done at that point in time. And therefore, if the sender meets up with a woman who happens to have a sister that was married at the point of agency establishment, that particular woman, assuming she has no other relatives, would be allowed to the sender. Before we continue in the Gemara with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading. L'shoinis shoinim, different expressions. Shemashma sheroitzu l'kabel atzma l'hovi chatzi ha-karbonos shel nozir acher. Person is accepting upon himself, he's obligating himself to bring half of the sacrifices of some other nozir. So assuming that the nozir, standard nozir, when he completes his nazirus, brings a korban chatos, a korban shlomim, and a korban oila. Whatever the value of those three sacrifices are, our friend over here is accepting on himself to bring, to offer, to purchase, or offer half the cost in the toward the purchase of some other nazir's sacrifices. So we read the Mishnah. Harei olai legaleach chatzi nazir. I accept upon myself. Legaleach is technically, if you translate it literally, means to take a hair, to cut the hair of, but it means to bring the sacrifices upon which the haircut can take place. So it has to do with the bringing of sacrifices. I accept upon myself. Harei olai legaleach chatzi nazir. Now, here, if we stick to a literal translation, we're really going to run into a gray area, a murky area, because when we get into the Gemara itself, you will see, if you take advantage of the markings, you can even scan ahead, you see double underlines under the expression Hakol Moedim, and then a little later V'chi Pligi. There are expressions concerning which there is no doubt as to what is intended. In our Mishnah, we have a Machlokes Tanoim, and the Gemara will point out under what circumstances the Machlokes Tanoim arises. And in fact, the Machlokes Tanoim arises specifically concerning the language in our Mishnah. So it would be beneficial for us to avoid trying to translate this particular phrase until we get into the Gemara. Nevertheless, the Mishnah tells us about someone who says, Harei olai legaleach chatzi nozir, and as we said, it has to do with someone accepting upon himself, bringing the sacrifices, half the sacrifices, or half the cost of the sacrifices of some other nozir, v'shama chavero, and someone else heard this, v'yomar v'ani olai legaleach chatzi nozir. He says, and I too, I'm going to bring half the sacrifices. Now, if these are the phrases, if these are exactly the phrases that these people use, and we have two speakers right now, the Mishnah says, Zeh megaleach nozir shalem, v'zeh megaleach nozir shalem, divrei Rebbe Meir. Both of these fellows have actually obligated themselves to bring the complete sacrifices for another nozir, not half, but the entire amount. At this point, some of the, you can find in the commentaries an explanation at this point that even though there doesn't exist such a thing as a chatzi nozir, when you look at the language of the Mishnah, he said, I'm going to bring the sacrifices of a half a nozir, chatzi nozir. So that doesn't exist. There isn't such a thing as a half a nozir. Rabbi Meir says a person is nevertheless obligated because of the concept that we've seen in the past, ein odom moitzi dvarav levatola. A person doesn't say something for nothing. So if he was obligating himself, and if you stick to his words, he's saying something that doesn't make sense, we can't go on that, and rather, he becomes obligated to something that's a reality. V'chachomim oimer. We continue in the Mishnah. Ze megalei chatzi nozir, v'ze megalei chatzi nozir. The Chachamim say, each one is obligated to bring just half the sacrifices. Omar Rava. Hakol moidim, everyone, that means Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree, kol hechod yomar, where the expression was chatzi korbonus nozir alai. Here's a very straightforward term. He says, half the sacrifices of a nazir are upon me. Chatzi korban maisi. He brings, each one would bring half the korbanos of a nazir. The word chatzi, you can see in this phrase, is attached exclusively to the word korbanos. So he's saying half the sacrifices of a nazir. Another expression that is clear. Korbonos chatzi nozir olai. The sacrifices of half a nozir. Everyone agrees. Even the Chachamim will agree. Kulei korbon boi isuye. The speaker has to bring all of the nozir's sacrifices. My taima. There is no such thing. We don't find half a nazirus. And in this phrase, you can see the word chatzi is attached to the word nozir. He opens up his phrase saying korbanos of what? Of chatzi nozir, of half a nozir. So it's very clear that he is saying something that in and of itself makes no sense, and yet he's obligating himself to something, so he's going to have to bring the full amount of korbanos, extend the full expenses of the set of korbanos of a nozir. V'chi pligi, where does disagreement arise? Belishna demasnisen pligi. Using the example or the case, the exact case of the Mishnah is the subject of the controversy. Rabbi Meir Sovar, Kevon diomar hare olai. Since the speaker said it, I'm accepting upon myself. Echayev akulei korban nazirus. I am obligating myself to all of the korban of a nazir. V'chi komar chatzi nazirus. And then when he goes on to say, after having said hare olai, he says chatzi nazir lav kol kamine. That has no meaning. And therefore we're left with his opening phrase of I accept upon myself, which means he's obligating himself to all of the sacrifices. The Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who don't ignore the end of his phrase, they hold Neder uPesach imohu. Yes, he originally accepts upon himself an obligation, he vows, but he also is immediately undoing his vow, so that we recognize the continued expression whereby he undoes his original vow, and therefore he's not obligated to bring the entire amount. Rather, as we saw in the Mishnah, he brings half the amount. Before we continue, we have a topic heading: Kabbalas Nazirus Bitnai Shivoli Lo Ben. Person accepts upon himself Nazirus conditionally upon the birth of a son, a Ben. And another possibility, conditionally upon the birth of a Vlad, a child. The Mishnah. Hareini Nazir L'chishyeli Ben. He says, I'll be a Nazir when a son is born to me. V'nolad lo ben. And a son is born. Hare ze Nazir. He is now, he is to become a Nazir. It's pointed out that a number of these points that the Mishnah says are obvious, and the Gemara will be asking, is it not so? Why do I need a Mishnah to teach the obvious? We'll wait for the Gemara to explain that. We continue. Nolad lo bas tumtum vandroginus, a person who had accepted upon himself Nazirus upon the birth of a ben. So we say that if a ben is born, so he's obligated. However, if a daughter is born, or a tumtum, an individual whose we'll say organs of gender are covered, so you don't know if it's a male or a female, or an androgynous, in English the term is androgynous, you find a person who has both gender signs, eino nozir. He is not obligated to nazirus. He obligated himself to Nazirus only if a male is born. The tumtum and androgynous would represent, let's say, the worst case scenario, a suffix. So, but our Tanakama is of the opinion that suffix Nazirus lahakel. When you have a doubt concerning Nazirus, you would be lenient. Im Omar, if however this man said Kishieli Valad, that I'll be a Nazir upon the birth of a Valad, a child, Afilu Noilad Lo Bas Tumtum Vandroginus, I raise a Nazir. Even if a daughter or a Tumtum or Androgynous are born to him, he is obligated, because these fulfill the definition of Valad. We continue at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. He pila ishto eino nazir. If there is a miscarriage, he is not obligated to nazirus. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the Tanakama's approach, and he says, a person whose wife miscarried, Yomar, he should declare the following. Again, we're talking about someone who had said, I'll be a Nazir if I have Kshieli Vlad, if I have a Vlad. The woman miscarried. Shimon says that this man should say, Im hoya ben kayoma hare ani nozir choiva. V'im lav hare ani nozir nedava. And here we're getting into something where my feeling is that when you're dealing with straightforward translation, these kind of gemaras are a little difficult to understand. So the term Vlad was used. Child. We also saw the term miscarriage. A child is defined, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, specifically Rabbi Shimon, as a pregnancy that reached full term. That's called Kalu Lo Chadoshev. Its months were completed. A person can't know for sure if the child, though born dead, was in fact a Ben Kayoma. Ben Kayoma is Again, translating doesn't help us too much. Ben Kayoma, for our purposes, means a pregnancy that reached full term. Why the child was born dead, that's another question. But it's a full term pregnancy. It's a child that we'll say could have, Ben Kayoma means could have lived. For some reason it died, but its death is not a function of it being, we'll say, premature or underdeveloped by way of pregnancy. And as such, even though it's born dead, it still fulfills the qualification of Vlad. So Reb Shimon says, here the woman bore a dead child. He pilished, so she miscarried. What was the nature of the child? Well, we're not sure. The man had obligated himself to be a Nazir if it's a Vlad. So Reb Shimon says that the father should say, Im Hoya Ben Kayoma, if this dead child was a child that had reached full-term pregnancy, so Hareani Nazir Chova, then I am accepting upon myself Nazirus right now. That is obligatory. Vimlav, if the child did not reach full term, Hareani Nazir Nedova, I am accepting Nazirus on a voluntary basis. Reb Shimon is, as you can see, of the opinion that a Suffek Nazirus Lahachmir, you should accept stringency, or deal stringently when you're dealing with a doubt concerning Nazirus. Chazra v'yolda. After the aforementioned miscarriage, there was a regular, healthy birth. And we're dealing with this man that had earlier said he'll be a Nazir, Kshieli Vlad. And now, Hareze Nazir, the Tanakama says, now he is to observe Nazirus. That same Tanakama who said that upon the birth of the dead child, the hipilosh, the miscarriage, he's not a Nazir. Well, now he will be a Nazir. Reb Shimon Oimer, Yomar. Reb Shimon says, no, it's not so straightforward. Rather, you have to say as follows, Im Horishon Ben Kayoma, if the first birth at the time of the hapola, the miscarriage, was a full-term pregnancy, harishon choiva vezunadova, the nazirus that I observed previously, that was the obligatory one, and now I'm going to observe a voluntary nazirus. V'im lav, if the first one, the miscarriage, was not a ben kayoma, HaRishon Nidava, then the first Nazirus that I observed was voluntary. Vezuchova, now I'm going to observe my obligatory Nazirus. There's a comment that Rashi makes. Reb Shimon Omer, Shema HaRishon Have Ben Kayoma. The first birth might have been a full-term pregnancy, v'chal olav nazirus, and at that point he was to fulfill his obligatory nazirus. And according to Reb Shimon, he did fulfill nazirus with the aforementioned stated condition. V'hashta ki yolda, and now with this second birth, Lo Chayel Nazirus. He's not obligated to be a Nazir. His original Nazirus vow has already been fulfilled. Ve'im kidvorecho yaseh. Rav Shimon says to the Tanakama that now with this second birth, a Nazirus will be observed. Nimsa ze mevi chulin lazora. Well, according to what I had said before, the bringing of sacrifices now would be tantamount to bringing, would be in effect bringing mundane animals into the temple courtyard, which is forbidden. Because as far as I am concerned, on the sad, on the assumption that the first birth was a ben kayoma, then he's already fulfilled his nazirus obligations. Elo yachsir v'yimne nazirus shnia. Rather, my solution to this is, he's to observe a second nazirus v'yomar and make the declaration. Imo rishon shepilo ya ben kayoma, nazirus rishon achova v'zunidova. Then the first nazirus that I observed was the obligatory one, and what I'm going to do now is simply voluntary. V'im lohoya ben kayoma, and if the first birth was a non-ben kayoma, namely it wasn't a vlad, nazirus harishon in the dove of a zuchova, then the first nazirus was a simply voluntary type nazirus, and now I am going to observe and fulfill my chova, my obligation. Now the Gemara. The Gemara opens with a reaction to the fellow who in the opening of the Mishnah said, I'll be a Nazir when I have a ben. And it said in the Mishnah that when a ben, when a son is born, he is a Nazir. Hi, Maila Memra. What do I need to teach that? A person accepted upon himself to be a Nazir upon the birth of a son. A son is born. He is to be a Nazir. Is that not obvious? The Gemara says, well, Mishum Seifa. Because of the continuation of the Mishnah, and here's the quote, Bas Tumtum Pandriginus Eino Nazir. In that very case, if he said, I'll be a Nazir upon the birth of a ben, the Mishnah says that if a daughter, a Tumtum Pandriginus, are born, he's not a Nazir. Well, the Mohaswa Pshita, is that not also obvious? He said, I'll be a Nazir if a ben is born. So the Gemara says, it's not so obvious. Mahu de Tema. One might have thought that when he says, I'll be an Uzir upon the birth of a ben, that the word ben is not specifically a gender reference. It doesn't mean specifically a son, but rather, l'chashi ibonehu de komar. Ibone means when I will be built, meaning building a family. The expression, v'ibone, Tosfos points out, you find in the Chumash, where it says v'ibone gam anochi, and with the birth of a daughter or a tumtum and a androgynous, that's the building of a person through having children. So that maybe the term ben is not exclusively a son. Komash molon delo. Our Mishnah is thereby telling us that that's not the interpretation of the word ben, but rather when the man says, I'm going to be a Nazir upon the birth of a ben, he means specifically a male child, a son. The Gemara continues, V'im omar sheli vlad. And if the man said that upon the birth of a vlad, and it went on to say, even in that case, even if there is born to him a bas, a tumtum, an androgynous, so he is a nazir. So the Gemara asks Pshita, it's obvious, he didn't specify gender as far as what kind of child. He said, if I have a child, whatever kind of child he has, he'll be a nazir. Is that not obvious? So mahu de tamom. Without the Mishnah, there was room for one to think, Vlad de mechshev beni inshi bo'inon. A child that's considered of significance in the eyes of the public. Now, as this recording is being made, it might not sound politically correct, but in the eyes of the public, for better or for worse, a son, a male child is considered of significance. It might in fact be quite, say, realistic even as this recording is being made, but it's the kind of thing that people won't admit to. And that is that a male son is more important or more significant to them. Anyway, that's what one might have thought in terms of the use of language. Komash Malon, the Mishnah informs us that that's not so. That when a person says, I'll be a Nazir when I have a Vlad, the term Vlad means a child, whether it be a male or a female or a Tumtum, an androgynous, any of those will obligate him to become a Nazir. Hipi lo ishtoi eino Nazir, the Tanakama. We saw at the very top line of our current Omid, of Gemara, if she miscarried, he is not a Nazir. This is the man who said, I'll be a Nazir when I have a Vlad. And the Tanakhama says, if it's a stillborn or a child born not alive, he is not a Nazir. Man Kartoni law. Who is the author behind this? Answer, Rabbi Yehuda decree who. It's a very abbreviated reference to that which we've seen before. We saw a Mishnah in which a man says, I will be a Nazir if there is a kur or 100 kur of grain in this pile. And before measuring the amount of grain of a strong wind blew or whatever, the grain got lost, and they never discovered if in that pile there was the 100 kor, kor being a dry measure, if there was 100 kor of grain in fact. So, Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, he's not obligated to be a Nazir. He had said that I'll be a Nazir on condition that we discover 100 kor in this pile. And Rabbi Yehuda releases him or exempts him from observing Nazirus because of the position known as Suffek Nazirus Lach. When there's a doubt concerning Nazirus, you can take the lenient position. So therefore, he pil ishto eino Nazir is in effect authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.